The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
24-year-old Salma Kazemi, a University of Colorado Springs graduate, is hiding out from the Taliban in Afghanistan with her mother. The mother and daughter, who live in Colorado Springs, traveled to Afghanistan in early August to visit family.
Fear the most that the Taliban finds my mom and my sister, finds their passports, or finds any type of anything that connects them to America.
The U.S. citizens were supposed to come back in September, but with all flights canceled, their family here in Colorado has no idea when they will be able to come home.
The one thing I want is for them to get somewhere safe, but there's nowhere to go.
19-year-old Ali Kazemi is frustrated by how the U.S. government has responded to the crisis.
The response is weak. The response is weak. It's just a mess.
That's a local report out of Colorado, obviously, and there's local reports popping up like that all over the country. Americans trapped in Afghanistan, and America's government saying, you got to try to get to the airport on your own. And there's also a deadline, August 31st. I mean, we're less than 2 weeks away from that. We're a week and a half out. How many are there? No one knows. Estimates, I'll get to the New York Post here in a bit, maybe 10,000 still. They have the capabilities, I think, to get 5,000 to 9,000 out of that Kabul airport every day. And I think the total for the past 5 days has been around 9,000. So they can't even get out what they have the capacity to get out. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We're coming to the last show of the week, which is amazing in and of itself. It's been a fast-moving week. We're certainly glad that you can join us, that you can join our growing audience. We're thankful to have our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3, on that platform that takes the audio version of this broadcast into 11 million homes. Of course, if you want the video presentation, whether live or as a podcast, you have to go to our website. It's offered exclusively at thetrumpet.com, thetrumpet.com/live. That'll take you right to the live stream of the program, which comes every weekday morning here in the Central Time Zone of the United States at 11 a.m. So you can make the adjustment wherever you happen to listen from. We also have a weekend edition that we send out to Phoenix, Arizona, and that will be a variation of this program here today, the Friday program. So we won't have anything posted on Sunday, in case you're wondering. But where is Joe Biden amid all of these crises? What a week this has been! And Joe Biden was in Delaware last week for a day or two. Then he's in Camp David for a vacation. He comes back to the White House for the Monday speech that he gave. Then he walks away, doesn't take any questions. He reemerges on Wednesday with the George Stephanopoulos interview. That was a disaster. And I guess he's supposed to speak today. He wasn't planned to as of yesterday. He's going back to Delaware for the weekend. There's some reports that he's not even sleeping well. And you can understand why, given what's happening in the world. But given what's happening with Joe Biden, the fact that he's slowing way down mentally, physically, there's quite a few people concerned about the president of the United States. I saw this just moments before the show, Rasmussen. A majority of voters, think about where you heard this first. A majority of voters don't think President Joe Biden is mentally or physically capable of doing his job and suspect the White House is actually being run by others. A majority in the United States. They suspect that the White House is being run by someone else or a group of people. Now go back and listen to yesterday's show. And listen again to all of the quotes that we have from America Under Attack, my father's booklet from 2013. We mentioned that article. Brad McDonald did it back in 2015, I think it was, on Barack Obama, that Antiochus spirit, and the attack on the United States from within. That's what we're seeing this week, among other things. So many different prophecies being fulfilled. It really is electrifying. I mean, it's a dark time for the United States. There's no getting around that. But if you know what these fulfilled prophecies culminate in, the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, I mean, that really does or should fire you up spiritually. This is from that Rasmussen report. A new report, National Telephone, an online survey, finds that only 39% of likely U.S. voters believe Biden is really doing the job of president. That's down from 47% in March. 47% believe that it was Biden who was actually doing the job of president in March. Now it's down to 39%. 39%! Of course, his approval rating is plummeting. He's just been criticized, not just here in the United States. And as I said on Monday, even the propagandists in the media have turned on him. That's because Obama has. That's because they no longer need Joe Biden to carry out their attack on the United States. And so they're using this crisis to get him out of the way. And then he's coming under fire from all over the world as well. No wonder he's reemerging this afternoon to give a speech. I think it's 1 o'clock this afternoon at the White House. We'll see if he takes any questions. I'm sure if he doesn't, there's going to be some shouting at the end of that speech. This was his, where is that clip? Clip 5. This is his communications director laughably talking about he never shies away from taking questions. Clip 5.
Kate, before we let you go, will President Biden, after his remarks today, take questions? He's given a couple of speeches. He did the interview with ABC News, but the White House press corps and the American people have a lot of direct questions for him. Will he take those today?
The president never shies away from taking questions. I'll let him make a decision if he's going to take questions this afternoon. But you saw he just did a full sit-down interview on this just yesterday. So he is always willing to take questions, and I'll let him decide if he's going to do that after his remarks today.
Never shies away, she says. I saw a pretty lengthy piece yesterday or last night from Newsbusters that went into the first 6-7 months. We're 7 months into this fake administration, by the way. 7 months. Look at the damage that's been caused in just 7 months. In any event, this article put together by the Media Research Center talked about just how little he's been out there in front of the press. In comparing it to Donald Trump, who really was the king as far as making himself accessible, even when the press absolutely hated him and despised him, he was there. He was giving questions. He was allowing for them to ask questions when he was on his way to Marine One or just outside the White House. He was in the press briefing room time and time again. But even comparing Joe Biden to Barack Obama, he's hiding. It's Joe Biden. That's what's happening. He's not functioning. Rasmussen, American people believe that he's not the one. They believe he's a puppet. And so he's off to Delaware. This piece at the Epoch Times talked about just how inaccessible the entire administration has been. There's been 2 days, I think initially, Jen Psaki said she was going to be gone for the whole week. So she obviously reconsidered that decision. But the Epoch Times says that for 2 days this week, there have been no press briefings from Psaki. As I say, Joe Biden didn't answer any questions after Monday's speech. Then he gives the COVID speech, about as tone deaf as it could possibly be, on, I think it was Wednesday. No questions taken after that. It says here, Biden on Monday delivered, basically... he makes the point I just did and says that in the Stephanopoulos interview, he talked about how that he couldn't see any way. I played that clip for you yesterday. He couldn't see any way how this wouldn't end in chaos. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. If you're going to pull out troops, there's going to be a chaotic end. Wouldn't take any blame for what we're seeing. Another piece, I think this was over at Breitbart, Kamala Harris. She hasn't made a public appearance in 7 days. 7 days. And then where's Anthony Blinken? He's the Secretary of State. He's gone missing. The whole administration. And then when they are pressed, or when they send out this poor gal, the communications director, she just, if it gets a little hotter under the collar, she redirects it over to the State Department or the Pentagon. They're just all passing the buck. And meanwhile, you have thousands of Americans trapped. You have chaos in and around the airport in Kabul. New York Post, it says the U.S. has evacuated 7,000. I think this report's from last night. But it says it's evacuated 7,000 from Kabul since the militant group seized control of Afghanistan 5 days ago. So 7,000 in 5 days. I mean, that's not that many per day. And particularly when we're looking at, what, 11 days left until the August 31 deadline? 7,000 in 5 days? It says, but there are still between, listen to this, 60 and 80,000 who need to get out, including more than 10,000 Americans. And then it goes through some of the individual cases. This Fazia Namadi, citizen in New York, living in New York, went to Afghanistan last month with her mom and daughter to visit her brother. It says, at the time, the situation seemed stable. Now she's been going back and forth to the Kabul airport in a desperate bid to get home. She's going back and forth to the airport, so evidently she can't get in. And she's an American citizen. She says, I'm stuck here. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I can't get out. That's what she told the New York Post. She said, as I'm talking to you, my body is just shivering, and it's like I'm in a panic. She's not alone, as you heard at the top of the show. Here's another example, clip 7.
It is insane. There are people holding their American passports. There are people that work with the Americans, and they're not letting anyone in. We are in huge danger, and we need help.
That's from ABC. I'm not sure if that's a local affiliate or ABC, the national network. But here's another, clip 8.
I believe that they've been looking for people who used to work for the U.S. government and for the government. It's just on the media, they say that they have nothing to do with those people. But in reality, they are looking for those people. And people have told me that they have seen people getting them out of their houses and shooting them on the street.
If you help the American government, if you help the U.S. military, there was another report, and this actually came from CNN, surprisingly. They went and interviewed this translator. Or at least they talked to him, perhaps over Skype or something. His face was blurred out. But he says that he moves to a different house every 2 weeks because he was there when the U.S. troops were there. He was helping the troops. He was translating for the troops. And he knows he's going to be executed if they find him. He can't get out. He's just living in Afghanistan on the run. Here's one more example, clip 9.
I feel confident that he will help. Since we work together, and this is the time that we need help, and we really need it, and everyone knows about it. So we are very optimistic about receiving the help and getting out of here.
Well, at least he's maintaining a positive outlook, but there's a lot of people who are absolutely disgusted with America, who see America as an unreliable ally after all these years of fighting together. There's an Afghan who worked to support the U.S. military, and now he's there hopeful that the U.S. will help him in his time of need. CNN's Brianna Keller, she you just heard from the communications director saying that Biden's always accessible. The CNN reporter here really presses her this morning on some of these scenes coming out of Kabul and even the oncoming deadline and how they're going to get all the Americans out and if America is going to provide any help for citizens, American citizens, or some of these translators and other helpers in Afghanistan to even get to the airport. This is clip two.
I know there's been a lot of criticism of the effort and of how things have played out over the last couple of days. But the truth is, the president prepared for this possibility. He pre-positioned troops in the Gulf who were able to rush in immediately. 48
All right,
hours
Kate,
after.
Well, look, I want to focus on what we're seeing. No, I want what I want to focus on is what's happening right now, because we're seeing pictures of Afghans throwing babies over fences. So I hear what you're saying about pre-positioning this or that, but let's focus on what it takes to get people safely through those walls. What is going to be done? I'm not hearing anything about safety corridors. We know that the British and the French are actually going into Kabul for extractions of their citizens. And the U.S. isn't considering doing that in the case of Americans or Afghans. So what concrete steps are being taken to deal with that bottleneck of getting people into the airport?
Well, those are on-the-ground logistical questions that the Department of Defense is better equipped to handle.
Right. I've got to refer you over to the Department of Defense. And they've already made announcements, as have other Democrats. No, of course we can't go in and create a safety corridor. Well, there's Brianna Keller saying, well, Britain and France, and there's reports that Germany, they've done the same thing. They've gone right into the streets of Kabul and basically armed. And if the Taliban give them any trouble, they'll probably shoot them dead. I mean, it's just the mindset. The United States coming out and saying, well, you heard it from Lloyd Austin yesterday. Well, of course we can't go into the streets. No, we can't do that. This is the United States of America. The pride has been broken. The nation of America, is under attack from within. Why shouldn't American forces be able to go and create a safety corridor so that people like this one I just mentioned from the New York Post piece can get to the airport and actually get in and get on one of the planes? This is from the Washington Post. It says the Biden administration is under pressure to expand its Afghanistan evacuation efforts beyond Kabul Airport after European forces crossed Taliban lines and entered the city to rescue civilians. So European forces are doing that. Now think about that prophecy in Daniel 11, the clash, the coming clash, the prophesied clash between the king of the north, that would be European forces, and the king of the south. Now, the Taliban's not the king of the south. They're not the head of the snake. That would be the Islamic Republic of Iran. But Iran is what, it's the head of the snake. It's the head of that radical Islamic movement. And when push comes to shove, and there's going to be a lot of pushing, it's Europe that finally says enough. And they come against radical Islam. Like a whirlwind, the meaning there, of course, means to surround, but there's also a mighty, mighty counterpunch to that push, that constant pushing coming from radical Islam. And then you look at Daniel 11:40, and America's nowhere mentioned in it. And you hear America's leaders, the military leaders, say, well, there's just really no way that, there's no way we can help you to get to the airport, and we sure hope you make it by August 31st. Prophecies being fulfilled, you can see things lining up perfectly with the way that God spelled it out. If you don't have it already, you better order the United States and Britain in prophecy and see where we are in prophecy. You can call our operators toll free 1-866-930-3024. Request Herbert Armstrong's masterwork on Bible prophecy, mailed to more than 8 million homes worldwide, and understand and know the future for the United States, for Great Britain, for the Israelite nations, as prophesied in your Bible. This from CNN. It says, when U.S. President Joe Biden finally broke his silence on the chaos unfolding in Afghanistan European allies who had high hopes for a reset in the transatlantic alliance were left dismayed. They thought, oh, finally, the bad orange man's out of the way. We got Biden back in. He's an Obama crony. So we'll be able to really strengthen that transatlantic alliance. And now you've got European forces marching into the streets of Kabul to rescue their citizens, even as the United States just sits there behind those barriers and listens to little girls saying, the Taliban's coming for me. There's quite a few U.S. soldiers, by the way, who are just absolutely furious at the weakness of America's leadership. Where is the courage? Where is the strength? Cut and run. Get all the troops out of there. Leave all of the military hardware and forget about the ordinary citizens that are dwelling in Afghanistan. Your own citizens. That doesn't even make logical sense. And that's what's discussed in America Under Attack. You look at all of those policies, particularly with respect to foreign policy during the Obama years, and everywhere that America would side with this particular group or this particular effort, Barack Obama got in there and he just went with the opposite. He aligned his foreign policy with America's traditional enemies and thought nothing of it. And he's still doing it. He's still doing it. Listen again to Brianna Keller grilling this White House communications director. Clip 3.
Of course, the images that we're seeing are heartbreaking. They're appalling. It is a scary moment. It is unacceptable to the president.
Okay, well, she's right about all of that. But what is the president doing? I saw a tweet yesterday because of all of these reports, and I'll get to one here in just a second. What was left at these military bases? What was left at the Bagram airfield? This weapons storehouse, basically. And there was a tweet suggesting that, well, now the Biden administration is contemplating whether or not it should conduct a bombing campaign to destroy some of those weapons they left behind. I mean, they don't even know. They're sending out signals. Maybe we might bomb it. We might bomb. We've got lots of criticism. We did leave behind a lot of tanks and planes and helicopters, machine guns, ammunition. It did fall right into the hands of the Taliban. And we're thinking about a bombing campaign. Really? You're thinking about it? This is a disaster. This is worse than Saigon. And it's about to be a lot worse than the hostage scandal in 1979. How many people are going to be left trapped in Afghanistan? What happens on August 31st? How many Americans are going to be trapped in Afghanistan with the Taliban in control on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, something that radical Islam celebrates as a tremendous victory? Victory over the great Satan. One last clip from CNN earlier today, clip 4.
You'll work to get them out, but, you know, this isn't horseshoes, right? Close doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
You get them out?
But look, the president has committed we will get every American who wants to get out of Afghanistan, and we are working to move as many of our allies who helped us, who stood by us, who helped our servicemen and women get out as possible.
What you are not saying, though, I'm hearing in there that you are prepared to leave people behind.
We are doing everything we can to get as many people out who want to get out before the August 31st deadline.
Wow, the non-answer. It sounds to me like you're prepared to leave Americans behind. And her answer is, look, we're doing everything we can to get them out by August 31st. That's the deadline the Taliban has given the Biden administration. And there's the White House communications director basically upholding the Taliban's guidelines. This is not a matter of ineptness or fecklessness, as I said yesterday. This is an attack from within. This is orchestrated from someone controlling Joe Biden, who's hiding away in Delaware for the weekend. Another long weekend away from the White House. There's no situation room. I suppose he'll have staff and such with him, but he's going to his house. And the world, in the Middle East in particular, it's exploding. Well, we've got plenty more to get to when we come back. We need more than an hour, in fact. But you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to request the literature, I gave you the toll-free number earlier, 1-866-930-3024, America Under Attack, as I mentioned, U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. You can also email the program, send us some feedback or a literature request, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Exactly how many Americans are left behind in Afghanistan?
Well, Nora, the U.S. government doesn't actually know the precise answer to that question.
As of a couple hours ago, a small handful of reports from American citizens who weren't able to reach the airport for whatever reason. We've seen the reports of congestion.
How many Americans, American citizens remain in Afghanistan?
I don't know. We haven't seen any hostile interactions between the Taliban and our people, and we haven't seen them impede or harass or obstruct the movement of American citizens from the environs into the airport.
Does the U.S. military consider the Taliban an enemy?
Our focus right now, the thing we're working against right now is time and space, and we want to get as many people out of Kabul as we can in as little amount of time as we can. There are no hostile interactions right now between American forces and the Taliban, and we want to keep it that way.
Wow, John Kirby. I mean, can't call him an enemy. That's like the UK military chief. Remember that? Now, I don't really think you should call the Taliban an enemy. And you read between the lines and everything you just heard there. And they're basically admitting, well, they're admitting a lot that they don't know. How many are there? Don't know. What about this? I'm not sure. But what I do know is that I'm going to really dance around calling them the enemy because we're putting our faith and trust in the Taliban's goodwill to get the Americans out. We're putting our trust in the Taliban. So he's not going to, he won't dare criticize the Taliban. This is difficult to watch. Yesterday there was the breaking news right at the end of the day, the Wall Street Journal. Confidential State Department cable in July warned of Afghanistan's collapse. I think the headline today in the print version of the Wall Street Journal, it says it warned of quick collapse back in mid to late July. It's happening fast. And what was it? The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Milley, what he said Wednesday? He said, we never got any information, certainly not that it would happen in 11 days. And then out comes the leak. And that's an interesting little wrinkle to this story as well. Get to that in a second. But this says about two dozen State Department officials in Kabul sent an internal memo to Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. No wonder he's in hiding. It says about two dozen State Department officials serving at the embassy in Kabul sent an internal memo to Blinken and another top State Department official last month warning of the potential collapse of Kabul. Soon after the August 31 troop withdrawal deadline, according to a U.S. official and a person familiar with the cable, they warned, the embassy was warning of the collapse of Kabul, the capital city. They warned of this, and yet all of these Biden officials, they're coming out right and left saying, we just didn't know it could happen this fast. You heard from Biden, remember the speech back in July, saying there's no way this is going to be like Saigon. There's no way that the capital is going to fall. And he bragged about the military, and then he just turns on a dime and blames everything on the Afghan military. Melanie Phillips, by the way, talked about how that 70,000 Afghans have sacrificed their lives in the war, this ongoing war against terrorism, against the Taliban. So, I mean, they've been known to fight. They've been out in front of the American forces. Of course, it was the American support that gave them courage and strength, that air power and such. There were a lot of forces to keep things in control. And how much control could have been maintained with just a small force, even just a base around that airfield? But we can't even have that. We've got to pull out the military first, leave all of the military hardware, and forget about the citizens that are now terrified. So terrified, in the case of some Afghans, they're hanging on to wheels of cargo planes as they're lifting off into the air and then falling to their deaths. That happened this week. That's what Joe Biden said on Wednesday. Well, look, that's 4 or 5 days ago. And then he's back into Delaware. The Wall Street Journal says the cable sent via the State Department's confidential dissent channel warned of rapid territorial gains by the Taliban and the subsequent collapse of the Afghan security forces. The cable dated July 13th. So I think that Joe Biden, we played the clips earlier in the week, I think his big speech and then the questions that he took back in July, I believe that was July 8th. So here they're getting, or at least Secretary Blinken, he certainly got the warnings. They're exposed. They're being exposed as the liars that they are. But what's also interesting about this is the fact that these kinds of communications are being leaked. Remember during the Trump years when we talk about all of the, I mean, there was a vast network of the way the CIA, the way that the Department of Justice, the way that they all worked, Jim Comey, certainly he was in on it, the way that he leaked these things to the New York Times and such. I mean, it was so carefully orchestrated that in some cases it was certain government agencies that would work with the Washington Post and then other ones that would work with the New York Times. Here we have this being leaked to the Wall Street Journal. Why would this be leaked? And who's going to be the one to take a hit from this? Well, that would be Joe Biden. He's no longer useful. He's now disposable. And so the deep state, they're working against Joe Biden. I mean, this is stunning, really. The way that the major media have, they all got the signal, didn't they? Somewhere. It came from somewhere. What did Laura Logan say to Tucker yesterday, that clip we played? This could be stopped in a heartbeat. You send 20, 30,000 troops back into Kabul and say, look, we're going to restore order. We're going to get our people out. And then we'll talk about a transition to getting out of here that would keep the Taliban from instituting Sharia law over all of Afghanistan. They could do that in a second if they wanted to, but they won't. They won't. Because really what's happening here is you've got some pretty dark and satanic forces doing everything that they can to really to maximize the victory, the power of the Taliban. And that's what was going on during the Obama years. They were working to empower the mullahs in Iran. They were working to empower the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Not Hosni Mubarak. Not the one that had made peace with Israel. And the peace lasted for 30 years. Obama wasn't trying to prop up Mubarak. He goes off to his first speech in Cairo in 2009, and you got the Muslim Brotherhood sitting there in the front row. And then as soon as Mubarak's regime was toppled, here comes Obama. He wants to prop up a good Muslim Brotherhood, man. He got Morsi in there. He had a hand in bringing down Mubarak. Then you have the Green Movement in 2009. These citizens that in Iran, they knew the election was rigged. They took to the streets. They were protesting this dictatorship that they're living under. And who does Barack Obama side with? He sides with the Islamic radicals. Obama himself is a communist through and through. He makes no bones about that. When you talk about his mentor, when you talk about, you know, the ones he hung around with in college. And then he's got all of these radical Islamist sympathies as well, as I mentioned yesterday on the show. I mean, culturally, it's even if it's not religiously, it's like he's a Muslim culturally. You've got communist, you've got Islamic. That's the influences there. And who's benefiting from this debacle over the past week? Certainly not the United States. You've got Britain, you've got France scrambling to try to get their citizens out of Kabul. You've got Europe just stunned at America pulling up the drawbridge and basically saying you're all on your own now. And then who are the ones just rubbing their hands together, benefiting from all of this, making great gains? Well, that would be radical Islam. That would be the communists in Russia. That would be the CCC party or the CCP in China. You think about the major prophecies leading up to the return of Christ, the demise of the United States and Britain, the rise of the Holy Roman Empire out of Europe, the rise of the kings of the East, headed up by Putin and then China, all of these communist nations. And then you've got the King of the South. You've got Iran. Pretty incredible. You know, there's reports, and again, you have to kind of sift through it. Brent noted this morning in some of our news gathering. These reports that are saying, well, you know, you've got Shia there in Iran and then Sunni in Afghanistan. And certainly not, they're not going to work together. And there's this big uprising now of the Taliban sweeping across Afghanistan. And, well, this really concerns Iran. This really concerns the mullahs in Tehran. Really, does it? Do you think for one moment that the U.S., the United States of America, hightailing it out of Afghanistan with its tail between its legs, do you think Iran for one second is concerned about this development? They love it. They love what's happening. This is from Foreign Policy. Iran welcomes Taliban rule in Afghanistan. Tehran's Shiite regime has strategic, economic, ideological, and ecological reasons for backing Sunni extremists. Of course they support this. They're helping the Taliban, in fact. And so is China. So is Russia. China's embassy is open for business in Kabul. They're not concerned about the violence. They're not concerned about the Taliban regime. They see all of the mineral wealth in Afghanistan, and they're looking at this as a cash cow. China comes in with all of its technology, pays the money to the Taliban. I mean, this is a boon for some of these anti-American forces. It says here, when the Taliban took Afghanistan's key Islam, Kala border crossing, with Iran. So then this sweep across Afghanistan, one of these key crossings into Iran, when the Taliban got control of it on July 9th, locals reported that Iranian officials on the other side welcomed them. Well, hey, way to go, Taliban. says, when on August 6th, it seemed the capital of Nimroz province in western Afghanistan was about to fall, and many of those afraid of the Taliban rushed toward the border to escape, Iranian officials instead reportedly refused entry to most of those fleeing. So when the Taliban were sweeping across another border town, you had local Afghans that were running to Iran for safety, and Iran was turning most of them away. No, we can't help you. You got to deal with the Taliban, my friends. Says here, Iran has a long history of hosting both key Al-Qaeda members as well as Taliban leaders. See, as long as it's to bring down the great Satan, that's where they can let bygones be bygones and work together to destroy the United States of America, to blot it out. It says here, several sources I spoke to on the ground across the country during a month-long reporting trip between July and August this year said that Iran has played a major role in the conflict. Did you hear this? Iran has played a major role in the conflict. It says, while I was reporting from Kandahar, multiple security officials told me that Iranian weapons had been found in the hands of killed Taliban fighters in the area. Just like in Iraq. Remember that years ago? All of those Iranian weapons that we were finding in Iraq that were blowing up U.S. soldiers? It's the same thing in Afghanistan. It's the same strategy. Bring down the United States. Kick the United States out of the region. And of course, we know that eventually there is going to be a Western power that reinserts itself or inserts itself into the region in America's absence. And who will that be? That will be the United Europe, the European Empire. And so, how, as I said in the first segment, how significant is it that the Taliban takes over? It happens in a matter of days. European leaders are in stunned silence for a moment, looking at America in full retreat, abandoning its own people. And then Europe finally waking up and saying, well, look, we're gonna go save our people. Even if it means going through the streets of Kabul with soldiers armed to the teeth. They're not afraid. Do you think for a moment that even with all of these great gains of the Taliban, even European nations like France, they're not afraid to confront them. Do you think Iran is afraid to confront the Taliban? As I say, Iran is behind this, and so is China. And they are celebrating. They're celebrating America's demise. They're celebrating the fall of the American Empire. It says here, multiple reports in recent years have accused Iran and its Islamic Revolutionary Guard of providing weaponry and training for the Taliban. It says in February 2017, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan told Congress that Iran was supporting the Taliban to undermine the U.S. mission in the country, noting that Russia, Iran, and Al-Qaeda are playing significant roles in Afghanistan. Russia, Iran, and Al-Qaeda. That's from testimony. That's from a lead commander on the ground, a U.S. commander. And these reporters again, they're getting some things right. Thankfully, they're finally exposing some of the evils of the Biden administration. Really, we should say the Joe Obama administration. But so many of these reporters, their coverage, it's so shallow. They just look at it and they think, oh, well, here comes great gains for Taliban. Iran surely must be concerned by these developments. As I say, they're celebrating this. It says here, the governor of the western Afghan province of Farah alleged the same year that training centers had been established inside Iran for the purpose of training would-be Taliban, and Iranian support was blamed for an uptick in violence that year. They're helping to train them. And all of those weapons, you know, some reports on the planes, because there's just so much maintenance involved, and obviously you have to have a lot of training to even be able to fly some of those planes. What if those land in Tehran or in Beijing? They're going to be used. The U.S. just left it all behind. This is from Reuters just yesterday. It says about a month ago. Again, just coming back to the fact that this is not, you know, gross negligence or incompetence. This is an attack. This is an attack. All this war chest, as Reuters put it. About a month ago, Afghanistan's Ministry of Defense posted on social media photographs of seven brand new helicopters arriving in Kabul, delivered by the United States. About a month ago, so the middle of July, about a month ago, about the same time that all of these people were signing off on a document in the Kabul embassy, the U.S. embassy, saying, look, this is going to fall to the Taliban fast. And the U.S. government, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, the Biden administration, they're sending all these helicopters to the Afghan government, the same government that's about to collapse in just a few weeks. It says here, they'll continue to see a steady drumbeat of that kind of support going forward, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told reporters a few days later at the Pentagon. Yeah, we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep sending over a lot of equipment to the Afghan government, as if they were going to be able to hold the fort when the U.S. left. And yet here are all these people we're now finding out. They knew that the Afghan army, without U.S. support, they knew it would collapse like a house of cards. And so who knew? How many knew that all of this American military power would just land right into the laps of the Taliban? Well, to answer that question, again, go back to the Obama years and think about all of the, as my father says, the illogical policy moves that empowered America's enemies. It says here, in a matter of weeks, however, the Taliban had seized most of the country, as well as any weapons and equipment left behind by fleeing Afghan forces. Video showed the advancing insurgents inspecting long lines of vehicles and opening crates of new firearms, communications gear, and even military drones. Everything that hasn't been destroyed is the Taliban's now. It all belongs to the Taliban. It says current and former U.S. officials say there is concern those weapons could be used to kill civilians. You think? You think that they could take these American-made weapons and now turn them on their own civilians with these revenge killings? There was one online yesterday. Police officer in some Afghan city, blindfolded, shot from behind, 5, 6, 7 times, 7 rounds. Says here, another official said that while there are no definitive numbers yet, the current intelligence assessment was that the Taliban are believed to control more than 2,000 armored vehicles, including U.S. Humvees, and up to 40 aircraft, potentially including UH-60 Blackhawks, scout-attacked helicopters, and Scan Eagle military drones. Drones, jets, helicopters, and all these armed vehicles, 2,000? It says between 2002 and 2017, the United States gave the Afghan military an estimated $28 billion in weaponry, including guns, rockets, night vision goggles, and even small drones for intelligence. It talks about how that when the Taliban began their sweep, some of these Afghan pilots actually used the planes to fly, I think it was Uzbekistan or somewhere, just to get out because the Taliban was coming through and they were murdering anyone who was a pilot for the Afghan army or for the Afghan Air Force. So the pilots took some of that hardware themselves just to use as an escape weapon. As an escape vehicle. It says here, there is more immediate concern about some of the easier to use weapons. Well, it talked about how some of the weapons, because of the maintenance and the training, they wouldn't just be able to use. But you do wonder, don't you, about China and Iran, if maybe they could make use of that, some of the more sophisticated weapons. Since 2003, the United States has provided Afghan forces with at least 600,000 infantry weapons, including M16 assault rifles, 162,000 pieces of communication equipment, and 16,000 night vision goggles. Wow. So 20 years on, I'll refer you back to that article that we had in the November issue of the Trumpet magazine back in 2001, where we predicted, and it was based on the sure word of Bible prophecy, that the United States would not win this war in Afghanistan. It would not win this war against terrorism. And we further said, Europe would eventually. Now what we're seeing is the United States surrendering in Afghanistan in a humiliating way, and the stage being set for Europe to confront this beast, for Europe to confront this king of the South. And you maybe can get a little bit of a preview of that in looking at some of these European forces saying, well, we're not going to just sit and wait at the airport. We're going to take some action. We're going to go get our citizens. We're going to go free our citizens. And America can't do it. America won't do it. Wow, this is stunning. These developments, so many prophetic implications that just run right through it from beginning to end. This quote I gave to you yesterday, my father in America Under Attack, again, if you don't have this booklet, make sure you call our operators, 1-866-930-3024. My father wrote, America has done nothing helpful about Syria in its many WMDs. We really have done nothing in Libya. We won't speak out against what's happening in Libya. We won't go fight for our own ambassador there. There was the Benghazi debacle back in, 2012? In Egypt, after that nation had peace with Israel for 30 years, we helped kick Hosni Mubarak off his throne and would not speak out against Mohamed Morsi. And then my father says this, can you explain these decisions with any logic? Many people can see that these are disastrous decisions, but we must understand that this isn't simply the result of ineptitude on the part of this administration, speaking of Obama, or naivete about how the world really works. We are seeing the after effects of a calculated, aggressive, satanic attack aimed at weakening and ultimately destroying the nations of Israel, starting with the world's most powerful nation. That would be the United States of America. What a stunning demise. Attack from within, as that chapter title says. Bible prophecy being fulfilled right before our eyes. You look around at what's happening all over the world. You look at what's happening right here in the United States. And I tell you, you better put your faith and your hope in the sure word of God's truth, Bible prophecy, but not prophecy alone. There's also a lot in the Bible about God's holy and righteous and perfect law. And it's because of lawlessness and sin that we're encountering all of these many problems, and they just keep getting worse. And God is calling upon our nations and our peoples to repent of sin, to turn to God. I gave a lecture this morning in class about remembering God's law and turning our hearts to our Heavenly Father. That's the only solution here. It's not in some man. It's not in some political movement. The only solution is in God and His family government and His coming kingdom. That too, by the way, is prophesied in hundreds and hundreds of passages all throughout the Bible. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We're putting the finishing touches on another broadcast. We're putting the finishing touches on another week of broadcasting. We're so glad that you joined us for today's show, and we look forward to you joining us again next week. We'll see you then.